You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported,
community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM. Reporting live for WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, November 5th, 2018.
You know, everybody has a story to tell. And I really enjoy creating things and then putting them out there and hoping that people engage with them.
Later in the program, WFHB correspondent Michael Glab speaks with Jeremy Shear about his new podcast, The B-Town Lowdown. That's coming up on today's edition of Big Talk Extra with Michael Glab.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Chris Jackson explains the mission of Community Council on Accessibility. Jackson explains the difficulties of talking about accessibility on Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
President Donald Trump and former President Barack Obama have been battling over Indiana's Senate race this weekend. Both current Republican president and the Democratic former president were campaigning for their party's Senate candidates over the weekend and into this afternoon. President Trump spoke in Fort Wayne today as part of a tour to boost Republican Senate candidate Mike Braun's campaign. On Friday, Trump joined former Indiana University basketball coach Bobby Knight and former governor-turned-vice president Mike Pence at a rally in Indianapolis. Mike Braun is a Jasper-based businessman who has largely self-financed his campaign, loaning himself millions of dollars. He faces incumbent Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly and Libertarian candidate Lucy Benton in tomorrow's midterm elections. Former President Obama spoke in Gary, Indiana, for Donnelly yesterday. The race for Indiana's Senate seat is considered highly competitive by many experts. Tomorrow's midterm election could determine which party controls the Senate. Republicans currently have a majority in the U.S. Senate with 51 seats. Democrats have 49 seats, including two independent members, Bernie Sanders of Vermont and Angus King of Maine. In order for Democrats to take the majority in the Senate, they would likely need to win at least 6 of 8 highly competitive races tomorrow. Democrats currently control seats in Indiana, Florida, North Dakota, and Missouri in competitive election bids. Republican Senate candidates currently hold Arizona, Nevada, Tennessee, and Texas. Voting hours across the state run from 6 a.m. until 6 p.m. tomorrow. Voters can check their candidates, get voter information, and find out more about their precincts by visiting the voter website, indianavoters.com.
17 Indiana state parks will temporarily close for deer hunts this month, including Brown County State Park and Griffey Nature Preserve. The two-day hunts are scheduled throughout November and December. They're expected to begin next week. State wildlife biologists say reducing a park's deer populations helps to maintain habitat for other animals and native plants. Bloomington residents have previously opposed deer culls in Griffey Nature Preserve. The city of Bloomington has contracted with hunting firm White Buffalo to conduct the deer cull of up to 100 deer in the nature preserve. Brown County hunters are expected to conduct the deer cull in that state park.
The Indiana Department of Transportation has officially opened Interstate 69, Section 5. The 21-mile section between Bloomington and Martinsville is finally finished some 2 years behind schedule. Delays in the project began shortly after breaking ground when NDOT's international private partner, Isolux Corson, went bankrupt. Equipment and ubiquitous traffic cones and barrels sat along Section 5 for a year before NDOT took over the project, a brainchild of former Governor Mike Pence's administration. The Indiana Department of Transportation says motorists can expect 70-mile-per-hour speed limits along much of the newest section of the I-69 extension beginning today. Crews spent the weekend removing barrels and uncovering speed limit signs between Martinsville and Bloomington. But NDOT says motorists along Section 5 will still experience periodic lane restrictions through the end of the month. The Associated Press reports NDOT missed its August 31st deadline for completing Section 5 after taking control of the project last year. NDOT is expected to break ground on Section 6 of I-69 from Martinsville to Indianapolis by 2020.
A 13-year-old boy who shot his teacher and another student at Noblesville West Middle School in May admitted to the attack this afternoon. The boy appeared in an Indianapolis juvenile courtroom. His name has not been released since he is a minor. Prosecutors say the boy found the keys to his parents' gun safe in Noblesville. He then took two handguns and 100 rounds of ammunition to school. Both the student who was shot and the teacher survived. The science teacher, Jason Seaman, tackled the shooter immediately after he started firing. The boy is not being tried as an adult. A juvenile court judge will decide whether to order the boy to spend time in a mental health treatment center or to be held at a state juvenile detention center. Prosecutors presented a video the boy allegedly made the day before the shooting. In it, the boy allegedly states his intention to kill other people before committing suicide. Indiana Republicans canceled an appearance by National Rifle Association President Oliver North hours before he was set to speak at a Noblesville rally for Republican Senate candidate Mike Braun on Sunday. Indiana Republican Party Chair Kyle Hupfer said North was dropped from the rally because it would have been, quote, the wrong place and the wrong time, unquote.
The city of Bloomington approved a measure to bond over $10 million for more trails and parks last week. The city is expected to approve the $10 million bonds this Thursday during the Board of Park Commissioners meeting. The City of Bloomington Communications Director Yael Cassander says the bicentennial projects are expected to extend Bloomington's trail system.
There are seven individual projects that were separated into three separate distinct bonds. Some of them have to do with our wildest spaces, like the Cascades Park, also Griffey, so turning a hiking trail around Griffey Lake that would link up to the Cascades trails and, we anticipate, to the new hospital site on the bypass. Also in the Cascades, it would convert part of that big, long roadway that goes through the valley into a bike pedestrian trail and then ultimately connect up with College and the Miller Showers Park. And then the other, the first one I think that was introduced is this really magnificent transformation of 7th Street. So from all the way over on the west side where the Beeline Trail intersects 7th Street, you know, sort of near Le Petit Café, all the way to campus, turning that into a shared street. So that would mean that there would be dedicated bike lanes protected by a median with trees from the traffic. So that would connect from the Beeline Trail on the west all along 7th Street. And then, of course, we're not in control of IU's campus, but on the other side of IU, on Union, it would go all the way to the bypass where that underpass is and then connect on to the 7th and Longwood Greenway. So effectively, it would be a really safe, protected biking all the way from the far east side of town all the way down to 7th Street and the Beeline.
But not everyone agrees with the $10 million bond appropriations for the proposed Bicentennial Trails project. During last week's four-hour City Council discussion of the trails bonds, City Council member Isabel Piedmont-Smith said there are more pressing concerns in Bloomington than city beautification.
Let's put even more icing on our cake. It's relatively easy to do. What would be hard to do, and what I think we need to do, what we must do, is address some of the pressing issues those who are less well off in our community are struggling with. Housing, addiction, homelessness, poverty. These are the real challenging issues that I think we could take a big bite out of or a big step towards resolving with an equivalent amount of money. We're talking about $10.265 million. That's a lot of money. We could put that towards a partnership with Shalom for a Crawford III supported housing project. We could put that towards a detox center, which we know our community needs, with other partnerships with other healthcare providers. We could put that towards land to, you know, lease for a dollar to somebody to build affordable housing. And instead, the proposal is to put more icing on the cake.
The municipal bonds will be paid back by the city by increasing property taxes throughout city limits. Cassander says that Piedmont Smith's concerns are valid, but that the city is already putting money into social betterment projects aimed at helping alleviate homelessness, addiction, and low-income housing.
It's not an either-or. You know, there's already so much happening in terms of the recommendations that came out of the Wage Growth Task Force and the Affordable Housing Task Force and the Safe and Civil City Task Force, promoting affordable housing in our community and actually accomplishing that, also creating jobs and stimulating economic activity, also going to things like Shalom Community Center, expanding hours, also pre-K support for low-income families, doing more with community policing and law enforcement diversion. All of those things are underway. And then thirdly, or maybe I'm onto fourthly now, I guess I would say that, you know, investing in our natural and built landscape and investing in mobility and livability and workability through these trails and investments is not, you know, purely beautification. This is something that will not just create something beautiful that, you know, some kind of a gated park that only the elite can use. We're talking about investing in public space, in the common good, something that anyone at any point along the socioeconomic scale can use and enjoy, and something that it truly enriches this city as a destination.
The municipal bonds are expected to be approved during this Thursday's Board of Park Commissioners meeting. The meeting takes place at 4 p.m. at City Hall in downtown Bloomington. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Benedict Jones.
And I'm Barbara Fuqua. The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from listeners like you and from the IU Health Foundation, where local gifts stay local, serving patients for a healthier Bloomington. Science writer and author Jeremy Shear felt he was missing a lot of local events because there wasn't a single place to find them all listed. So he founded the podcast, The B-Town Lowdown. He co-hosts the weekly production with Jennifer Richler. The two update listeners on all the latest Bloomington happenings, and they interview a special guest for each show. Shear joined host Michael Glab on last week's Big Talk to chat about his journey through the worlds of writing and recording. The conversation continues on this week's edition of Big Talk Extra.
You've written a lot of articles. For a while, you specialized in sort of a science thing,
yeah,
with a little even deeper specialization in energy.
Yeah.
And I want to mention, you're the author of a 2013 book published by St. Martin's Press, Renewable: A Reporter's Quest to Make Sense of the Coming Revolution in Alternative Energy.
That's right.
Did you have to bone up on chemistry and global economics to figure out all this energy stuff?
Not exactly that. I certainly didn't bone up on chemistry. I think that's beyond my capabilities.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm certainly no expert in economics. And frankly, I want to make clear to listeners, I am not an expert on energy or renewable energy, despite having written this book. I know a lot about it, but I wrote the book. I mean, the short story here is that I was doing a lot of science writing.
Yes.
For A Moment of Science, for Sound Medicine, doing some other freelance stuff. And I just felt like, well, maybe I want to try writing a book on some kind of science topic. I wasn't sure what. So I got in touch with a literary agent and pitched some ideas. And the first things that I sent out actually went nowhere.
Uh-huh.
So doing a book on renewable energy was actually a publisher's idea.
Oh.
And so I thought, okay, well, I don't know a ton about that, but I can educate myself. And so I started reading up about it, wrote a proposal. And then I did find a publisher who was willing to pay me sort of a pittance to write the book. It was a small amount of money, but they were going to publish it. And so I went about educating myself about renewable energy and what that is, how it works, why it's interesting, and ended up writing a whole book about it.
Following the release of that book, you gave a TEDx Bloomington talk about renewable energy.
Right.
You led that talk off by talking about the 1889 Paris World's Fair.
That's right.
Where, and gosh, I didn't know this, that they had a solar power generator there.
Right.
Did you know this before you started getting into this?
No, not at all.
Tell me
about
that.
It was all news to me. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's really fascinating. So the reason that that became the topic of that TEDx talk is because the book ended up being much more historical than I thought it might be. When I set out at first, I thought, well, I'm going to travel around the country, which I did, and meet scientists and go to renewable energy installations like solar farms, wind farms, geothermal plants. And I did all that stuff. And that's in the book, but the bulk of it ended up being more historical. And that wasn't the plan. But once I started digging into the histories of these technologies, which I felt I needed to do just to understand them, I realized that's what really interested me the most.
But what's surprising is that they actually do have history.
Oh, yeah.
This is not all brand new stuff.
No, it's not at all. And in some ways, it's surprising, and in some ways, it's not, right?
Yeah.
Like solar energy, people have been using the sun for power forever. It is the original source of any kind of energy. I mean, you know, the sun is the source of all energy on the planet, right?
Right.
It makes plants grow and animals eat plants and then other animals eat animals, et cetera. Wind power, of course, goes way, way back. People have been using wind to power ships, you know, ever since ships with sails were invented. In any case, it was fascinating to learn the histories of these things. And that sort of became part of the point of the book, that you might look at a giant wind tower or a shiny solar panel and think, wow, well, this stuff is brand new. It's sort of futuristic.
Mm-hmm.
And my point is, well, no, it's actually been with us all along. And that it's really, fossil fuel energy, which is much more recent.
Yeah.
If you look at sort of the grand scope of history. And that's not to denigrate fossil fuel energy. I mean, there are plenty of issues with it and, you know, emissions and global warming and such. But it's really powered the modern world. I mean, our world wouldn't be the way it is without the discovery of coal and oil and so on. In any case, though, in the one thing that was interesting to me is in the grand scheme of history, we've been using renewable resources much longer than fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in a moment where there's renewed interest in renewable energy. And it looks a bit different, or it's on a larger scale, but it's really nothing new.
Now, right in this area, you can drive over to the Indy Airport. And as you're going in the access road, you see this huge field of solar panels. And then if you take I-65 north between Indy and Lafayette, you see those miles and miles and miles of huge turbines.
Yeah.
And it almost looks like something out of a science fiction magazine.
Right.
But it's old hat.
It is.
Yeah.
It's just bigger.
It's bigger.
It looks really cool. But, you know, the landscape, especially across the Midwest, anywhere there were farms, used to be dotted with windmills.
Right.
The windmills were smaller.
Yeah.
But every farm, you know, many homesteads would have its windmill for dredging up water or powering small appliances, stuff like that.
you did a lot of science work before as a writer, as a speaker and all that. Do you miss that?
In some ways. I mean, I looked at, you know, just to be clear, I am not a scientist. You know, I have no training in science. I was a science writer, which meant that I got into interviewing a lot of scientists and writing about science for regular people.
Right.
I really enjoyed that in many ways because there's an endless amount of stuff to write about. Science is fascinating. I got to talk to many, many really, really smart people about what they do. And it was cool to be able to at least try my best to translate that stuff into language that just anybody can understand. But it's not like – so in some ways I miss it. But in other ways, I just like creating things. You know, I like writing. I like producing things. I like putting stuff out there for people to engage with. So whether it's science or whether it's telling local Bloomington stories – in some ways, it's kind of all the same to me. It's all interesting. It's all fascinating. You know, everybody has a story to tell. And I really enjoy creating things and then putting them out there and hoping that people engage with them.
Well, one of the things that you put out there is the B-Town Lowdown. How often can we catch it?
Okay, well, it comes out every week. I publish the episodes every Monday morning, like literally 12 a.m. Monday morning is when they come out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, for those people listening who don't listen to podcasts or you've never done it or you're only kind of vaguely aware, the way it works, of course, is that it's on demand.
Right.
So if you find a show that you like and you subscribe to it on your phone through an app, say, then you can listen to it whenever you want.
Yeah.
So it's not like you have to listen only at that time when it comes out. It comes out and then it's there pretty much forever. So you can listen to, the current episode whenever you like. You can listen to back episodes whenever you like. You know, there are tens of thousands out there in the world. And they're pretty much all free. And you can subscribe to any of them and listen to them whenever you like. And because it's audio, you can listen when you're doing other things.
Right.
When you're working out, when you're walking your dog, when you're folding the laundry or preparing dinner. It's so convenient, and it really is this rich world of audio.
That was Jeremy Shear, founder and co-host of the weekly podcast, The B-Town Lowdown. Check him out on all your favorite places to find podcasts. Shear was speaking with Big Talk's Michael Glab. Full episodes of Big Talk air Thursdays at 5:30 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Support for WFHB comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. More information is available online at laurenwoodbuilders.com.
Now it's time for Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community.
Welcome to Activate, featuring audio profiles of local volunteers who stand up for what they believe in, spark change, and create meaningful impact in our community. We invite you to get to know some of these volunteers through their inspiring stories of service.
Hi, my name is Chris Jackson, and I volunteer with the Council for Community Accessibility and chair the Accessibility Subcommittee of the Council. I first joined up with the CCA sort of as an outgrowth of my day job, which is doing community outreach at Monroe County Public Library. I knew about the CCA, and we'd had some accessibility issues at the library that we wanted help with. So I joined as the new chair to the Accessibility Committee. It's been incredibly inspiring to me because it can be really difficult to talk about disability. It's an awkward topic to bring up in a casual setting. So it's great to have an environment where we focus on nothing but talking about disability and accessibility. They have a long track record of making a significant difference in the community. What we do specifically in our subcommittee is go to businesses and service providers with a tape measure and a checklist and really measure the basics of access from parking and whether the parking places are accessible to how you get from parking to the front door, whether the service counters are accessible, whether somebody using a wheelchair can navigate through a business space, can use the restroom. And so we've made a difference at a huge number of local businesses. I will mention one very recent thing we did over the summer. We had a parent who, students in the Monroe County Community School Corporation, she uses a wheelchair and had some access issues in attending functions at her kid's school. She brought it to our attention. We approached the school corporation with the idea of surveying all the schools that are in Bloomington in Monroe County Community School Corporation, which they very eagerly accepted. So we surveyed, I believe, 18 different locations this summer. We actually found access barriers in each and every one of them. Many of those were very minor, and we just heard back that they are addressing almost all of them in immediate work plans. So the schools that had access barriers to perhaps a parent or a prospective student or anyone using a mobility device will become more accessible as a result of our work. That's 18 locations that I expect to be radically changed for some individuals over the next 6 to 9 months. I think Bloomington is a town that really does value inclusivity. And a lot of people honestly state that that's an important value. A lot of businesses say that. And yet there are barriers all around that really prevent us being as inclusive as we should be. You know, when people stop being a part of going out and being a part of the community, that isolating impact has a real impact on people's health. We really want people to be involved to enrich all of the services that we provide and to enrich their lives as well. We know we're making that difference with the CCA. It's very satisfying to be working on disability and accessibility issues because we do hear about the significant difference it makes. Current statistics are about that 1 in 5 people in the United States have a disability of some sort. So it's a huge segment of the population. Disability is a spectrum, and some of us are on the disability spectrum from birth with one or sometimes multiple disabilities. All of us will experience, or virtually all of us will experience disability at some point in our lives, more likely as we get older. And the changes that we're advocating for really are a benefit to everyone. So if anyone's interested in learning more about the Council for Community Accessibility, I would encourage you to come to one of our meetings. We generally meet the last Monday of the month at 4 o'clock in the first floor McCloskey Room at City Hall. To become active in the council, really all you need to do is show up. All of us who participate are volunteers, and there's lots of work to be done in making Bloomington more accessible for everyone. Thanks for listening. My name is Chris Jackson, and I am with the Council for Community Accessibility here in Bloomington, Indiana.
You've been listening to Activate, a co-production of WFHB and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, working together to inspire, engage, and connect individuals to their community. Listen to episodes of Activate online at WFHB.org. You can read more about the profile, see photos, and connect to featured organizations and causes. And visit BloomingtonVolunteerNetwork.org to discover even more opportunities to serve, give, and advocate. Get inspired. Inspire others. Activate in your community. For WFHB Community Radio and the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network, I'm Lucy Shake.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin and Sarah Vaughn in partnership with CATS, Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Michael Glab.
Activate is produced by Lucy Shake from the City of Bloomington Volunteer Network. Our engineer is Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmedeke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Barbara Fuqua.
And I'm Benedict Jones. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news at WFHB.org.
And stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system, coming up next on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.